After lengthy research, including interviews with Noriega in his Miami prison cell, Eisner states, "On the key points, I do not think the evidence shows Noriega was guilty of the charges against him. I do not think his actions as a foreign military leader or a sovereign head of state justify the invasion of Panama, or that he represented a threat to U.S. national security." Eisner concludes, "My analysis of the political situation and my reporting in Panama before, during, and after the invasion brought me to the conclusion that the U.S. invasion of Panama was an abominable abuse of power. The invasion principally served the goals of arrogant American politicians and their Panamanian allies, at the expense of unconscionable bloodshed." The Arias family and the pre-Torrijos oligarchy, which had served as U.S. puppets from the time when Panama was torn from Colombia until Torrijos took over, were reinstated. The new canal treaty became a moot point. In essence, Washington once again controlled the waterway, despite anything the official documents said. As I reflected on those incidents and all that I had experienced while working for Maine, I found myself asking the same questions over and over. How many decisions, including ones of great historical significance that impact millions of people, are made by men and women who are driven by personal motives rather than by a desire to do the right thing? How many of our top government officials are driven by personal greed instead of national loyalty? How many wars are fought because a president does not want his constituents to perceive him as a wimp? Despite my promises to SWEC's president, my frustration and feelings of impotence about the Panama invasion prodded me into resuming work on my book, except now I decided to focus on Torrijos. I saw his story as a way to expose many of the injustices that infect our world, and as a way to rid myself of my guilt. This time, however, I was determined to keep silent about what I was doing, rather than seeking advice from friends and peers. As I worked on the book, I was stunned by the magnitude of what we EHMs had accomplished in so many places. I tried to concentrate on a few countries that stood out, but the list of places where I had worked, and which were worse off afterward, was astounding. I also was horrified by the extent of my own corruption. I had done a great deal of soul-searching, yet I realized that while I was in the midst of it, I had been so focused on my daily activities that I had not seen the larger perspective. Thus, when I was in Indonesia, I fretted over the things Howard Parker and I discussed, or the issues raised by Razi's young Indonesian friends. While I was working in Panama, I was deeply affected by the implications of what I had seen during Fidel's introduction of the slums, the canal zone, and the discotheque. In Iran, my conversations with Yamin and Doc troubled me immensely. Now, the act of writing this book gave me an overview. I understood how easy it had been not to see the larger picture, and therefore to miss the true significance of my actions.